Welcome and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of This Week in Testing. I hope you are all well, wherever you may be on this planet right now. Very excited to be hosting another episode. This is episode number 49. And grateful to those in the audience I can see that are regular listeners. Hello there, welcome. And also big welcome to folks who are new to This Week in Testing. So I'll give you a quick overview of how things work and then we'll get stuck in. So I typically spend up to about 15 minutes giving a rundown of some of the things that have been happening in the testing community this week. So lots of observations, lots of shout outs and celebrations to be had. So I will run through that. And as I'm doing so, have a think about some of the things that you've been up to this week. Maybe you are trying out some new things with your team, or you found a particularly scary bug that you're okay sharing and talking about. Or maybe you have a question for the community today. I'll give you an opportunity in a little bit to put your hand up and then you can come up on stage and jump on in and get stuck in, or we'll have a conversation and see where things go today. So this is an official Ministry of Testing event. So please, if you do end up on stage, be mindful of our code of conduct, which you can get access to on ministryoftesting.com. Great. So this is recorded and you can get access to all of our This Week in Testing, which we started recording. We've got about three or four available now. If you go to ministryoftesting.com/podcasts, you can listen back to This Week in Testing. And also, if you follow our YouTube channel, just do a YouTube search for Ministry of Testing. We also host it there if you prefer to listen to podcasts by YouTube. Great. Okay, so what has been happening this week? Well, I am very, very excited to share that AJ Wilson, who is an incredible community person, she officially joins Ministry of Testing next week as a lead insights and trends analyst. So we have been working fairly recently on a new part of Ministry of Testing where we pull in lots of trends, lots of insights, lots of analysis via the community to give the community really useful information about things that are happening in the community at kind of a global level. And AJ is joining us to head up that part of Ministry of Testing. For those that know AJ, they know that she's just super awesome and is often joining This Week in Testing and also co-hosting as well. But AJ is part of the community and has been for a while and does lots of awesome things. So yeah, very, very excited to work with AJ very, very soon. So yeah, watch this space. She'll be joining officially next week. I thought yesterday we hosted an event called The Testing Planet, and it was all about communities of practice. And there was many, many amazing advice shared, and you'll be able to access those recordings over the coming weeks. Some will be available to all, and some will be exclusively available to our professional and unlimited members here at Ministry of Testing. So look out for them. But it's something that Drew Pontikis shared. He shared the following. He said, collective success is the thing that is valuable and the thing we reward. And I thought that is a wonderful way to celebrate the kind of ethos of a testing, QA, and quality engineering community. So I thought I'd give a shout out to Drew. If you're not following Drew, he has a wonderful blog that you can get access to. So if you just look for Drew Pontikis on LinkedIn, you should be able to connect there and do check out his blog. He's got lots of good things, particularly if you're looking to set up your own internal community of practice at your workplace. He shares lots of great advice. We've got a few more meetups popping up. So yeah, it's all happening. We've got two more meetups in Munich happening in July. One is a special bug hunt on the 11th of July, and also another one on Playwright Tilt and Accessibility on the 24th of July. Also, we've literally hot off the press just added another Berlin meetup. So folks who can get to Berlin on the 17th of July, please do so. If you want to find out about all of our meetups, you can go to our dedicated meetup page, ministryoftesting.com/meetups. We also bring those meetups onto our events page. So if you're on the Ministry of Testing homepage, you'll see the events on the bottom of the page there, but you can also click a link to events and see a good old list of stuff that's happening all across the world. So yeah, do go check out those meetups. So we have put other stuff live. Oh my goodness me, there's so much to go through and I'm just checking the clock already. So I'm going to whiz past that. I want to call out some folks that are earning their certificates in test automation. So Ministry of Testing have test automation certificates available, foundation, intermediate and advanced. We had Colin, Adam, Erica, James, all earning certificates over this week. So many congrats to those. And also just a big shout out to Adam McKinnon. He continues to help people. So if someone gets stuck when they're running through the certification course, they can post a question on the club, which is Ministry of Testing's forum. So club.ministryoftesting.com. So if you get stuck, you can post a question and then the community will gather around that person and help them out. And Adam consistently turns up. Huge kudos to Adam. It's amazing. He loves getting stuck in and helping folks kind of solve challenges they might face as they're going through the courses. So yeah, thanks a lot, Adam. Really do appreciate it. More things in the world of automation. Saw a good post from Ben Doan on LinkedIn. For those who are not following Ben's a regular here at This Week in Testing. And Ben is just urging folks to just do it, to get stuck in with automation, perhaps not to overthink things too much. To quote Ben, want to start using automation in your testing, just do it. Want to level up your automation skills, just do it, make a start. He's putting out a number of posts around the world of automation. So yeah, if you're not following Ben, please do go check out Ben Doan, surname spelled D-O-W-E-N. Great. Okie dokie. So yeah, career growth stuff. So what's been happening with people moving around into different jobs? So Tama Juni has joined EastMed as a quality assurance tester. Congratulations, Tama. Or Tama, apologies if I've mispronounced your name. I saw that Thomas Ponet found a new contract role and Eve started a new role at the BBC, Eve Bullock. Very good, that's very cool. And we've also started through the Ministry of Testing LinkedIn page. We posted this 3 days ago. If you are open to work, just post on LinkedIn and tag Ministry of Testing to say that you're open to work and give some description about, you know, what skills you can offer and what you're looking for. We will repost that. So as Rosie Sherry, who's the co-founder and CEO here at Ministry of Testing, you know, her line is, we will reshare it. Our network is your network. So please do take us up on that offer. We've got a lot of reach with our LinkedIn profile account, which you might be familiar with. But yeah, just post that you are open to work and tag Ministry of Testing and we'll get it out there, right? This is the way it works. We can help connect you with folks across the globe. So for example, Chris Haynes did exactly that, put out a request, and Robert Fay as well. So just go for it. But I also see the BBC are hiring, the New York Times are hiring a QA engineer. It seems like things are moving. Oh, and I've just seen on my notes here that Joe Richards, who joined some of the earlier This Week in Testing, that she starts a new role on Monday. So congrats, Joe. That's great. I know Joe and I once had a really good conversation about regression testing. I think when the early days of This Week in Testing, when we were hosting things on X, formerly known as Twitter. A few more things happening in the community. We had the Testing Planet contributor. So Kulas Angeles talked about community yesterday in the Testing Planet episode and had previously appeared on another episode. He got a promotion. So he's now a director of software quality engineering. So bug congrats or big congrats, Kulas. That's great news. So things are happening, folks. It feels like opportunities are there. And I do, you know, we definitely see that it is challenging. So hang on in there and let's help each other find those next opportunities. Something I've spotted this week is Kind of not going back to basics. I don't like to use the term basics, but I like to frame it as essentials. So a number of people in the community are talking about like core skills of, you know, what it means to be a tester. So for example, Christoph van Kriegengen on the club asked the question, what is a good QA engineer? We also put out a question, what skills make you a good tester? And we were after like, you know, if you could just say there's three skills that make up a good tester, what would those be? Because I think the answer to that is essential to give us confidence, and particularly for those who are new to the career, who may, you know, be hearing lots of things about like, oh, it's all about AI, or you've just got to become an automation engineer. And I say that in sort of inverted commas, that people might be panicking that they need coding skills and all of that stuff. Whereas I think this thread, this one particular, what skills make you a good tester, I'm hopeful gives people a reminder about what really matters at the core of being a good tester. So yeah, maybe that's one we could discuss on stage a little bit later. I'd be curious to dig into that a bit more. Also, I found a post from 2019 that I thought I'd revisit and put it back out there. Again, talking about, you know, what makes a good tester. And I wanted to see if there's anything that's changed. You know, what is it that's different now? That's what sat 5 years ago when it comes to a testing mindset. What is it you think is a testing mindset and how does it help? And I like this quote from Sebastian Stouts, who's super active on the club. Quality does not only matter to end users, but to all stakeholders. So it was a good reminder. There was a good discussion about how you talk about quality. And I thought Sebastian's was a useful reminder. Also, Callum Akehurst Ryan, I'm enjoying, he's doing a round of posts saying testers as Dungeons and Dragons. So he's taking the world of Dungeons and Dragons and creating characters who are specific tester types. So if you're not following Callum Akehurst Ryan on LinkedIn, do go check him out. It's really cool. He's really reframing the world of testing and the world of Dungeons and Dragons. So you can get to check that out and geek out on it like I did, which I thought was really cool. I saw that Lisa Crispin and Janet Gregory, authors of a number of wonderful books on testing, including Agile Testing, which is my favorite testing book. I'll put it on record. There you go. They've released a mini book called What is Quality? So do go look for Lisa Crispin and Janet Gregory. Do grab that mini book, download it and get stuck in. And I also wanted to do a shout out to Nicola Lindgren. I was reminded the other day of her excellent YouTube channel. Again, if you want to go back to the core and the essence of testing and what really matters, do look for Nicola Lindgren on YouTube. She has a brilliant channel. She shares lots of accessible information about, you know, what makes a good tester, how to get hired, how you might interview, all stuff like that. So really, really helpful stuff from Nicola. So yeah, big shout out to Nicola. Okay, folks, it's 9:15, so it's probably a good time to get some people up on stage and see where we go with today's conversation. So yeah, I'll ask a couple of questions or maybe a few questions. You know, is there something that's happened this week that you'd like to discuss? It could be anything that's been happening at your workplace, related to testing and quality and beyond. Maybe you're trying out something new and you want to get some advice or thoughts on it, or maybe you're stuck with something and you want to get some advice from the audience today. So yeah, let's get people up on stage and we'll go from there. So I'm going to put myself on mute, quickly grab myself a cup of tea, and then we'll get stuck in. But you know what? I don't have time to grab that cup of tea because I see Ben Doan has put their hand up. So thank you, Ben. I'll get you up on stage and then I'll sneak in a sip whilst I'm on mute. Ryan, welcome this week in testing. How's your week in testing been?
It's been very good, thank you, Simon. As I said last week, I think in a post, not this week, tea happens. Oh, sorry, tea is life.
Tea is life.
Tea,
yes.
Happens.
I love it. Well, yeah, I'm enjoying a nice chai tea. So I thought that's my Friday afternoon treat. But there we go. How about yourself, Ben? What's been your tea of choice today?
Oh, so I regularly drink, I've been drinking Yorkshire tea.
Lovely.
And I drink that with a small splash of milk and a quite a nice dark brown color with no sugar, for those of you who care about such things.
100% care.
I thought you might. I try to remember which T battleship's number I am, but
that's brilliant. But thanks for joining us, Ben. And yeah, I mean, you're a regular here, and I very much appreciate you hosting as well. Jump on in. What is there something on your mind that you'd like to discuss, or perhaps get some other folks on stage to get in the mixer as well?
Absolutely. So first of all, I'd really like to give a shout out to you may know her from I think it's one of the testing YouTube channels. I'll remember which one in a moment. Vila, I can't roll the R's enough because it's a really nice Dutch name, who has recently started posting and is an excellent person to jump on and join in with the conversation in the community. Her recent post on test automation is also excellent, and it's especially about the topic of test automation not being about saving you time, but changing the nature of the work that you're doing. And I had quite a good conversation under that. And to peel back the veil a little bit, thank you very much, Simon, for giving shout outs to me and Callum there in the introduction. So as Callum posted the other week, there was a great conversation that was held between Callum, the legend that is Vernon Richards, Vila, and myself a little while ago. And we were talking about exactly the topic of how the LinkedIn algorithm works and how we can engage with the community and make the most out of it, and how we can give back and how we can use our content. And it really, you know, I'm enjoying hearing it reflected back in your roundup today. I'm like, this is brilliant. It's working. So I kind of just want to say congratulations all round to us.
That's amazing. And literally, before I stopped talking, my next bullet point was Verla's point about automation. I was going to quote the line that she shared because I thought it was really powerful. So I just didn't quite get to it as I looked at the clock and it was quarter past the hour. But yeah, I'm loving the stuff that's being shared.
So I guess a big shout out to anyone on the call who wants to increase their presence in the community and get more involved and do more content creation. Go check out some of the recent posts from Callum where he actually gives his six, I can't remember if he called them golden rules or six principles about using your content as a tester. They're very powerful, and I've been learning a lot from Callum on that. So check it out. You too can be recognized.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, that one is not on my radar. So I will definitely go and check that out and see if I can reshare it in the places. Very cool, Ben. No, I appreciate you sharing. Ben, should we get Ollie up on the stage?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Ollie, let's bring you up on stage. One moment. Ollie, welcome. It's good to see you again. How's your week in testing?
Hello. Yeah. All good, thanks. Good to be here again. How has my week been? It's been busy this week. I've been covering for someone on one of the teams that I'm on, but I've kind of been on the a bit aloof with it, or like loftier, just dipping in and like testing ideas rather than software. So I've been getting my hands dirty this week, which has been good. Getting a fair bit released. And I thought I'd give a little update on, I had a talk about quality with one of the teams.
Brilliant. I'd love to get an update on that.
It was really interesting. I think it was six of us in the end, maybe seven. I've got to figure out the workshop format, and I leaned pretty heavily on that video by Dan Ashby that you sent over, so thank you again for that. But yeah, it was one of the things that kind of came out quite a lot was that people see quality as making the best of the situation, or the best, almost like the best of a bad situation, rather than making it the best situation in the first place. So yeah, that's something I'm going to follow up on. I haven't had a chance to actually go through all the findings, because I just had like a Fig Jam board up and kind of went through what definitions of quality used. Dan Ashby's example of, like, if you think of a shoe, what do you think of as good quality? It's going to take you out of the software context. And then just got people to put up ideas and of what they think makes good quality and what we do. And we went through them. We didn't get a chance to go through all of them, though, unfortunately. But yeah, and there was an element of, I think, basically only about three or four of us were actually doing a lot of the talking. So I didn't get to see what everyone thought. So that's something I want to figure out, how to get everyone involved. But I think it kind of highlighted that is a broad and slightly ambiguous topic in places, which is what I'm trying to undo, I guess.
I mean, that sounds amazing, Ollie. Like, straight up, I was like nodding away at my screen, like smiling, going like fist pumping, going, that's awesome. Because, like, it sounds like you've broken a huge barrier and you've now like opened the door to having good, I was going to say good quality conversations, but more like good conversations about quality. That's brilliant. And yeah, it's kind of like that sense of, oh, we want to get all this done and there's this we can discuss and it's overwhelming. And even just one thing that you've done, and you've done loads of things from the sounds of what you just described there, is fantastic. And that, you know, that's going to spark, you know, at least in those 3 to 4 people who are able to speak up, it sparks something in them. And as you say, perhaps the other two folks, they may have had loads of things going on in their head and they were just trying to work it out and perhaps weren't in a position or to vocalize that or be in a position to share it. But no doubt it's had a positive impact. Yeah. And also collectively deciding what it means, and whatever your definition is helpful, because it's, you know, building that collaboration and that common lexicon amongst a bunch of people who are coming at things at different angles. So yeah, nice one.
Yeah, well done. That's cool. It. Thank you. Yeah. Hopefully, so a new quarter starts in about a month. Beginning of August. So that's why I'm gonna revisit it, because I've had a lot on. I don't want to burn myself out too much. So yeah, and the team structure might change in a month's time. So I think at that point, so at the beginning of each quarter, we carry over some stuff, but start a new problem statement and figure out ways of working, make sure that's all good. So at that point, I'll reintroduce the conversation and see if we can work it in and see where it goes from there.
Very cool. I wonder if there's kind of like, I hate to use the word subtle, but maybe it is subtle, like just ways of slowly kind of keeping that conversation going without putting the pressure on, where it's, I don't know, you share an article like, oh, I read this thing the other day, it's really cool, or I had to think about this thing, what do you think? Just like asynchronous chat, really lightweight, just to keep it bubbling away, kind of as a theme, but not like, hey, we need to sit around for hours and discuss this thing and we haven't got time to do that. More just like letting it bubble away.
Yeah, exactly that. I think, that's definitely going to have to be a thing to kind of keep it kind of in people's minds, but not hammer it too much, like you say, otherwise you're just going to put people off.
Yeah. And Ben, jump on in. I'm sure you've got thoughts on this as well.
Oh, I was just going to say, I always fall back onto the principle of find an ally and then make what you're doing with one other person visible and build from there, because it's really hard even to introduce any new thing to 4 people. Like, even 4 people is a lot. So starting with just one-on-one and then demonstrating to 2 or 3 other people how it's working and then letting it grow from there. And then all of a sudden, by the time you're introducing it to a bigger group, you have a groundswell of people who are in, they're supporters of what you're doing, they get it. It also gives you a chance, especially if you find 1 or 2 people you really trust, a chance to iterate on things quickly because they're willing to give you strong feedback. And that's just general introducing new stuff advice. It's just cool. A thing I use.
Yeah, okay. That's very good advice. Yeah, I do have my eye on one or two people, so I'm going to be speaking to them in the next few weeks.
For some reason, Ollie, just keeping things light for those people that you had your eye on, like I can imagine if you're all working remotely, perhaps on your next video call, you've got like a t-shirt with a question, like a statement, let's talk about quality or something, like really subtle. It's just there. They're like, oh, what's on your t-shirt? Oh, it's funny you ask.
Simon, I love how your idea of subtlety is somewhere between subliminal messaging and outright investing in printing a physical object that's branded.
Big time.
Just as a shout out, maybe a way to be as blunt or subtle as that without having to invest in real merchandise is to use something like OBS and put a little overprint so that you've got in the corner all the time, ask questions about quality or something. Like you could do something without having to actually buy the t-shirt. Although I do love the idea a lot. Like,
loving it. I'm loving it. Yeah, I mean, the overlay.
Stickers. People love stickers.
Yeah, stickers, yeah. T-shirts, overlays. I mean, I think we're onto something here.
A digital background.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Brilliant idea. I'm loving that. Well, thanks for sharing, Ollie. And please stick around. Like, you're more than welcome to stay up on stage. I do see that Manish has got their hand up. So I'd love to bring Manish into the conversation as well, Ollie, if that's cool you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, Manish, let's press the magic allow to speak button and let's see if technology works for us today. Hey, Manish, how are you doing?
Hey, guys, pretty good. Thanks, Simon. Hey, Simon. Hey, Ben. Hey, Ollie, how are you guys doing?
Oh, good, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. Thank you. I mean, I've been a regular in the past. I mean, it's been a couple of months. I'm very busy at work, so I've been itching to join back these meetings for a while now. I'm glad I was able to make it this week.
Thank you for joining us. And how's your week been, Manish?
Okay. Not just the week. The past couple of months have been really busy. Lots of questions. I mean, we have been trying something new. So my organization, so they wanted to for us to build a new set of marketing applications for my company. And so there were quite a few questions that were raised or asked of the quality team. I'll give a small brief about what has happened. So I've been with this company for about 2.5 years now, and then we do bi-weekly releases. So that in total gives us, what, about 65 releases that we have done till date. And for most part, everything went fine, but of late, lately there has been some issues. There were three or four different releases where we had some issues that got slipped into prod. And the very next thing that I hear is like the questioning from the management that like we have less confidence on the quality team. I mean, that was kind of discouraging. So I thought, so they are seeing these issues. I'll probably go with them and see, okay, where we can improve. I mean, I did not react or respond to them right away. But then these things kept on happening, and every meeting there was this one common phrase that was kind of repeated again. That's like, okay, we have less confidence on the quality. We have less confidence on the quality. I took it for about probably 3-4 times. And then the fifth time I spoke up and I said, okay, so when you say you have less confidence, can we get into the statistics of it, right? So we have, so I gave them all the figures. So we had 65 releases. So we had three failures. I said we can get into the details of the failures. So I was basically giving them, trying to give them the statistics before they can go on. So I told them like we have 3%, which is like less than 5% of failures. Okay. I gave them the statistics, and then I went into further details. Like, okay, so when we talk about quality, when we did the retrospective or the root cause RC of these failures, so it came up to the end decision was that it was the content management. So we use a content management CMS system that the product owners, they kind of publish certain content, the authors. We have a bunch of people, right, from UX to designers to product owners, and then the engineering team. So all teams, they have to work in tandem or as a unit for us to be able to publish all these pages live. So in a couple of instances, what happened was certain content was not published to the right environment. And then when it went live, so that content was not being displayed, right? So the questions got raised as in like, why did we miss this? How did we miss this? So then came up all these questions about process. So there's a process set in place that certain content cannot be published by the QA team into certain environments. So I was like, we do not have control over this content. So that's why we always advocated for having our own set of test data. So where we have complete control over. And so when we presented them all these evidences, they're like, it's not the QA team that is the only team that is responsible for the quality. So all the other upstream systems, which are from where we are getting the content, they are also equally responsible for the content or for the quality of the whole product. And then when we presented these evidences, so they realized, okay, it's not fair to put all the blame on the QA team. And then they brought in a new process that is well working right now. So I just want to bring it up to the team now that we are talking about speaking up. So I thought this might be a good conversation where if somebody were to blame the QA team, then we should probably listen to all their concerns and then probably and speak up with all the evidences that it's not just the QA team that's responsible for the whole quality aspect. It's the entire team.
Ah, good on you, Manish. And I can imagine, well, I have been there as well, so I can totally relate to that feeling of like, why are we as the QA or the testing team being like having the finger pointed at us? It's a horrible feeling. It really is a horrible feeling, particularly if you've had a round of really successful releases and you're like, hang on a minute, all this good stuff's happening. Like, why are we talking about that?
Exactly.
So yeah, really, you can go on a real emotional roller coaster. So yeah, sorry you had to experience that, but amazing, like good on you. For your advice was incredible, right? Like listen to the concerns and then just talk about the evidence, get some data, get other people involved in the conversation. And it sounds like, you know, it turned a corner where there's a change in the process now and that acknowledgement that it's more of a whole team effort when it comes to quality. So yeah, your advice to our listeners today to speak up and find that in you to do so.
Absolutely, right. I mean, I was amazed to see how few open conversations can bring up a big change. I mean, things might take time, but then it's definitely an initiation point where things are bound to take the right turn from here on.
Yeah. Ollie, go for it. Please go for it.
Yeah, I think that was just great how you had the conversation about it, because it's really easy to just take it and just take the blame. And often you can still speak up and they won't listen. So it's really good that you were able to have that conversation in the first place, and then that something good came out of it. Sounds like it was kind of, well, it didn't start ideal, and even then maybe not the end of the world, but yeah, it sounds like it had a good outcome in the end. Yeah, so it sounds like it was handled really well, to be honest.
Cool. And one other thing I wanted to bring up was one recent change that we did within our team. So within our organization, we have our own design system. So we were using an organization-wide design system that we initially had, but then which we realized later that this was not bringing in the right kind of results for the marketing team. So it might be valuable or it might be applicable for the other applications. But then when it came to marketing applications, so those design systems were not playing the role that they intended to. So we came up with our own design system, and it was a very good experience. I mean, I've never worked on a design system before. So we started very early in the process, got involved right from the UX design system. So we were in all the design system meetings, trying to hash out all the possibilities of what colors should there be. And then So this is the first time I got to know firsthand about what research goes behind the color palettes that are being used, and then how each color palette defines or enhances your brand. So I mean, this was pretty interesting to know the kind of research that goes behind in coming up with these designs.
I'm working on a design system, well, adjacent to a design system and branding at the moment as well. And yeah, it does open up some interesting conversations. And I mean, I've worked on in a different role on branding side of things, and it's always interesting to see either how tied some companies are to how exact you are with their colors, and to others who are really loose, just really loose with it, and end up making some quite horrendous looking things. And yeah, where the software creator comes in and sets the rails around what can and can't be done. And yeah, all those conversations. So yeah, we're at the beginning of putting a design system in place and unifying all of our components, because we've currently got components doing the same thing spread all over the place. Yeah, and it's quite a big task as well. It's not something to be taken lightly, and it has a wide impact across a whole platform.
Of course.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I wasn't aware of the kind of research that goes behind it. So I mean, when I got to know about the kind of research that goes behind it, I was really amazed that all these days I was just like, okay, maybe these guys, they pick up these components or designs from somewhere, but that's not the case. It turned out that, I mean, they do a lot of research behind coming up with this, the color palettes, the fonts, the font colors, everything.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Ollie, I interrupt you there. Go for
it. Oh, no, sorry, actually, I unmuted, but I actually didn't have anything to say. So, yeah, sorry.
Okay, no worries.
Go ahead, Simon.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, what I love about that is that opportunity to bring your testing mindset and your QA mindset into that conversation. Like, you know, no doubt you're asking questions like, yeah, but what about that? Or what happens in that situation? Or how might we present this thing? Also, the amount of research and respect for accessibility as well. I always found that amazing, how designers really get into the detail when it comes to accessibility. I think I shared on the newsletter a couple of weeks ago, a designer that I've worked with in the past, and you know, he was really obsessing over how a button should appear and its weighting, and it was fascinating, like thinking in terms of analogous to our world of software testing. I can imagine how it is easy to go down these rabbit holes, to go really deep into something to ensure that it's the best it could possibly be, and how when it comes to design systems, how you know when to stop. And I think there is a connection there with the world of testing, like when should you stop testing a particular thing, like what is good enough, like what is your kind of acceptance of quality, how do you define that collectively, and what is good enough to allow you to ship stuff that gets you feedback from your users, or do you have to hold back because it's not quite there? Like, it's a real struggle, and I think it's a healthy struggle, because I think we're always facing that as professionals who want to do the right thing for our users and customers, yet we also want to get feedback, so we've got to get stuff into production. So kind of, it's a real head scratcher every so often when I reflect on that.
I think there's a kind of, like we've spoken before briefly about shifting focus, right? So like, I remember saying to some designers before, we were redesigning an app and they were getting really hung up if the devs hadn't made it exactly how they designed it. And I remember saying to them, think forward 2 months ahead, 2 months after this has been released, are you going to get annoyed about that? Whatever's annoying you now, are you going to be annoyed in 2 months' time? And if you are, then we can address it. But if not, we can just let it go and move on. And I quite like that, yeah, that perspective of shifting focus.
I love it. And I think you highlight a really good point there, Ollie. Like, in the moment, everything can feel very important. Like, it, you know, right now, it's so important, you know, that we've got to ship this in a certain way. I think you raise a really good point, Ollie. And I think we face that as testing, QA and quality and engineering professionals all the time, because we can go deep into something and we can become obsessed with a particular thing. And that's not a criticism. It's just sometimes what happens to us with the way we work. And then it's like, oh, actually, you know what? Does this really matter? Maybe it won't in a month's time. I mean, maybe there's an official heuristic for that that we could coin today, where it's like the time travel heuristic, where how would I feel about this in 2 weeks' time? How would I feel about this in a month, 6 months, a year's time? And then ask ourselves that question. The McFly heuristic. There it is. It's officially named. I love that.
I just want to introduce two parallel concepts. So one is one of the cognitive biases. So one of the cognitive biases is the hindsight bias. So you have to be really careful when you look back at things to now that you know way more, not to fall into this cognitive bias of, oh, if only we had. It's like, yeah, okay, well, we can learn for the future. But now we know more, it's easy to think backwards in time and think, oh, that could have been so much different. But yeah, sometimes you have to figure out how. And maybe, I guess, the McFly heuristic is about trying to apply that looking back but ahead of time, which is exactly the kind of mental gymnastics testers love and everyone else does their head in.
I love it.
I think you also touch upon, again, like the good enough, but also, so we've got a bit of a mantra of like, release something that you're not too emotionally attached to, so that you can then change it going forwards or rip it out completely if it's not working. But yeah, being able to look back and then you don't get too tied up, and that's like, cool, we can look at that if we want to.
There's another thing to layer on top of this. Are you familiar with the idea of opportunity cost?
I've heard the phrase.
So the basic concept, if I'm getting it right, of opportunity cost is what are we either implicitly or explicitly not doing because we're investing our time in this. So it's not,
right,
do I want this button green? It's, do I want this button green more than logout working? Because we only have time to do one of the two, right? So it's about widening your field of possible things you could be investing your time in, so that out of the narrow tunnel vision thing that you're looking at, and then weighing up what it is versus what the opportunity cost is, what the cost is of not doing other things to make room for it. So that can be very, very useful when it comes to conversation with designers about, well, I want it exactly like this. And it's like, cool, you can have it exactly like that in August, and this is the stuff we'll be doing in the meantime. An absolutely perfectly reasonable choice to make, where we can either invest more, we have to get more people in to do this, or we can not do the other things, we can delay them, or you can have it green for 2 months, and then we'll, in August, we'll have capacity. So we could do it blue for you in August, and you could have 2 months of learning if green worked. Do you want it green? I will leave it green.
Yeah. I used to have that kind of conversation a lot more when I was a project manager, but that still is a conversation you have as a tester, right? You want to drive everything and everyone forwards and not linger is the idea. So yeah, that's definitely, yeah, move little and often releasing, and then you have a lot more flexibility is how we work.
I mean, that was one of the conversations that we had with our design team, or rather the management team. So they initially wanted it to be kind of a waterfall model where, okay, designers redesign all of their design system and then somebody gives in a handover to the dev team or the engineering team. But we wanted it to be other way. So we wanted both the design and then the engineering team to work hand in hand with each other. So the outcome was that was very, very helpful and very fruitful. So the designers, they usually come up with very fancy stuff, right? Like, so, but then from their point of view, that makes sense. But from the engineering point of view, we look into other aspects of, okay, so this is a design heavy page, so how is it going to affect the performance of the page, right? So the designers, they don't actually look into that aspect. So having the engineers part of the initial discussions hashes out all of these possibilities right in the initial stages, where okay, they can bring up their voice and say, okay, we can definitely do this, but then at the cost of the performance of the page, do we really want that? Right? I mean, that's a very important question to be asked. I mean, you design all this fancy stuff, but then what if the end user is, for him, it's taking too longer for load the page, and then he's no longer interested in looking at the page itself, right? So these are very difficult conversations, so which can be possible only if the designers are involved in the discussions in the initial phase.
I'm loving that. I'm loving those reflections and that advice, Manish. Just to add, I'm trying to think of, I think the good testers here, the good QA engineers that, and I put this on this post around what skills make you a good tester. One of them I called out was spotting patterns. So not design patterns as such, but just patterns in general, connecting the dots based on your experience of an existing system, your experience testing other systems and other things. And then being the person who might spot things that a good majority of people, it just might not even be on their radar. And I think that then leads to the good testers building connections with people that aren't of the same discipline. So, you know, with designers, developers, product owners, sales, marketing, customer services, etc. So they can spot patterns beyond what is currently being looked at and kind of joining the dots and saying, oh, yeah, but if we do this, that means that, or if we do this, we can't deliver that thing. I think it's kind of maybe touching on perhaps some senior product manager type roles and the skills they have. But I feel the good testers I've worked with in the past are able to do that as well. So yeah, just had that reflection. But Ben, I think you were going to jump on in. So feel free to dive on in.
I was just going to give a shout out while we were on the topic to Heather Reed, who did a keynote speech at PeersCon, which was "Wait, that's not tested." And one of the glorious things she spoke about in that talk in her presentation, I think she's done the presentation at a few other places as well, was exactly about the kind of conversations about scope and about the cost and about the business getting return on investment for that cost. So she was working out for her company how much, what she called a slice, which was, I guess, not quite a sprint, it was some other measurement, but some kind of like a period of 4 weeks, it was like two sprints or something, like how much a slice cost in just pure engineering time. So simply average salary of engineer times team size, right? Not anything fancy. And how many slices it was estimated to deliver a feature. And therefore, you had a rough cost of the feature that you were being asked to introduce. And then you could start asking the questions of, like, how much are we expecting this to save or gain for us? And it does it make it worth it? Like, will this be worth it in 6 months, in a year, in 5 years? Like, how long has this got to be? And it's all a guess. But effectively, it was about using numbers to make better guesses at where you invest your money in terms of your engineering time, and then working out whether your bets paid off. And it was a very interesting and product engineering way of thinking about the world, which I found fascinating. And I would love to live in a world where that kind of thinking is used more often, not in a combative way, but in a very pragmatic, yeah, this is worth it because it's really got value. Let's spend the time on it. And yeah, actually thinking about it, we actually won't do that because it isn't worth it. And occasionally I've been in teams and organizations where those choices have been made nice and early not to do things because they won't pay off. But more often I've been involved where things are abandoned, but after you've already done a whole load of investment. And a little bit of that McFly effect would have maybe really, the heuristic maybe would have been really helpful.
I love it, Ben. And just to add to that, sorry, Ollie, I know you've just unmuted, but Heather did a similar talk at Test Bash last year about using data. And I think she covered the I'm just trying to think because I was there watching it live. I think she covered the concept of the slice and actually saying to the business, you know, how long it's going to take for us to get this money back, assuming that engineers cost this amount per year. It just gave some real hard numbers. It was like really revealing and all about return on investment. So that's definitely worth checking out. It's called, I've just done a search for it. If you look up using data to drive testing decisions, and it was Heather Reed. So yeah, do go check that out. Ollie, jump on in.
Yeah, that was a really interesting talk at PeersCon, and I've definitely used a few bits from that to in conversations and to kind of help persuade people. I think the whole having value for somebody, whether it's the like the end user or for testability or I don't know, something else to help make reporting to higher ups easier. Not that that's really a day-to-day concern for me at least, but that is a really good argument of being able to push something through, but is it going to make something better for anyone? And I really like the idea of having data-driven decisions for testing and product in general. Like if people aren't using a feature and you can prove it, then don't bother putting more effort into it. There's a whole thing of sunken cost fallacy of basically throwing good money after bad. If it's not returning on your investment, leave it. You don't need to keep going.
Maybe it's just as whilst it's fresh in my head, throwing good money off the back of a broken DeLorean. There you go.
Yes.
Nice. I was just going to blow your mind because you've been listening to a whole lot of Dan Ashby recently, and I just wanted to add something. So part of the way Dan thinks about quality in the layering on top of the quality is the classic quality is something that matters to someone. Value to someone that matters. I always like to layer on top at a given point in time. And the reason that I do that is because if you think about I always use the example of the Windows XP operating system. When the Windows XP operating system first shipped, it moved forward the quality of the Windows operating system immensely. It was a huge groundbreaking thing where for the first time you had the Windows professional kernel being used for a customer operating system. It looked kind of cool, although some people didn't like the Fisher-Price look, some people loved it. But it was it was such a popular operating system, even though they really shouldn't be, there's a very small hardcore of people still using it. But if you gave most people Windows XP as their computer, like if you joined a job and they gave you a machine with Windows XP on now, you would run a mile, my friend. You would be like, what on earth is this? And it's not because Windows XP has changed. It's because our expectations of as customers and the market has moved on, right? So I just want to layer on top of the fact that sometimes time to market is a really important quality characteristic, because there might only be a window of time that could be anywhere from a couple of weeks to a couple of months to a couple of years where a particular product or feature is relevant and you can get value from it. It does not last forever. And that's really obvious for things like what Peter was telling us the other week in terms of apps for the Euros, right? Because that is an event, it's a point in time, it's something that comes and goes. If you weren't ready for when that came out, it would be useless. But it's less obvious for other things over time where the perceived quality of your product goes down because the competitor did something interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting dimension, isn't it? The time element and the temperamentality of it, I suppose. Because one of the things I'm getting my head around with that quote of quality is something to someone that matters, and then to layer on, what was it you said, sorry, at a to someone that matters at a certain point in time.
Yeah, yeah. So the original quote isn't Ashby. It's help me out here, people.
Jeff.
So Weinberg's quote.
Weinberg. Yeah. It's iterations of Weinberg's quote. Jerry Weinberg. There we go. So there's the original Jerry Weinberg quote, and then Dan Ashby layers on a whole stuff about breaking that down into the functional correctness, the value, and the like emotional response, like the goodness.
Yeah, and I think even with the echo, I should know their names, but James Bach and I can't remember his name, but
Mike Bolton.
That's it, of course. Who added on to someone that matters? Even that, I was at first be like, oh, okay, that's is that snobby? I suppose does that just stop someone who's not involved in the project at all? Like your developer mate saying, oh, you should do this, and it doesn't. It's not relevant at all. But I suppose it's just that it does show the that quality can be quite an unstable idea. It's quite hard. It's just hard to grasp, really.
Wow. Yes, the temporal layer is interesting, and I think just to go to the back and bottom, the someone who matters. The interesting thing is, I think the idea is meant to be to take away the focus on you as a tester or you as an engineering team, and remember it's of the customer that's paying you money, right?
Like right,
in their point of view, I think the person that matters is meant to be the key stakeholder, the end user, the person who's paying you money.
Rather than
like it's not you that matters, it's the person who matters. I think that's why it's meant to be.
Cool. I kind of assumed it was people in like stakeholders, including the development team, but then that's where things can get blurry between a development team and the end user. And
I'm not saying I fully agree with it, because sometimes I think the testers and the development team are very important stakeholders, and sometimes quality things matter to them a lot. I'm just, that's my interpretation of the way that they modified the quote.
I
support that or not.
I place a lot of importance on end user, kind of has the biggest say, because they're the ones using it, they're the ones who are going to pay one way or another. Their voice has a bigger weight usually.
Well, folks, we've come to that time. It's nearly the hour. So apologies for Al Goodall. And someone else who just had their hand up, which I didn't quite grab your name there. But do come back to another This Week in Testing. We try and run this at the same time every Friday. Revisit the recordings as well. They're now available on ministrytesting.com/podcasts. You can check them out. We've probably got maybe 3 or 4 available now, and we're going to put them up on the site as soon as we possibly can the week after they are hosted live. So do check them out and come back to this. I've very much enjoyed the conversation we've had up on stage. So thank you so much, Ben, Ollie and Manish. It's lovely to hear from yourselves and to kind of get into the nitty-gritty of this stuff. I think your line there, Ollie, quality is an unstable thing to grasp, and when you sharing that our expectations change. I mean, wow, I think those are the statements of the day, right? So very grateful for our listeners today. Thanks for sticking with us for the hour. There are many things to check out at ministryoftesting.com. So do head over to the site when you get a chance. And if you want to get a bit more of This Week in Testing with perhaps a bit more detail and written format, I do recommend signing up for the newsletter. So we aim to send that out every Monday morning. That's through email. And we also post it through the Ministry of Testing LinkedIn page newsletter. So if you sign up for that, you can get access to that once we publish it. We also have a record of all our newsletters on ministryoftesting.com. Just look for the link for newsletters in the footer. That's probably your best way to kind of get a snapshot of what's been happening across the community. And of course, join another This Week in Testing. And if you're up for it, you are more than welcome to come up on stage and share a little bit about what's happening in your world, and perhaps celebrate some people that are doing good stuff in the community. But we're going to wrap up for today. Thank you so much for being with us, and we wish you a wonderful rest of your day and a lovely weekend, and we will speak with you soon. Bye for now, everyone. Take care.